hopefully you check the emails the church sends, just because important stuff in there. So one of them was these two books that I recommended to you. I was going to just pass it out to you. I thought that's in the whole parish. Just check your email. There's two books. One is called Cultivating God's Creation, Orthodox Christian Parenting. It is an awesome book. Like, it's a book that like couples don't have kids yet should read. People who are not haven't married yet should read. But it's super important and really spiritually minded. Really, like, tons of quotes from the saints and from elders about how to train your kids in virtue, how to do it. So that's like my favorite book. And then there's another book written by a really wonderful man, Dr. Philip Mamalakis. I met this family, so in the St. Mary of Egypt camp in Spokane, and I met this amazing family. These kids were amazing. They were singing these girls knew all these like church songs. They're an amazing family. They were singing all these like different melodies, and I was just like this. They were just full of love for each other. And like, who is this family? You know. Anyway, they're really wonderful. Their spiritual father, Gregor, is a friend of ours, and got to know the family. And the husband's professor at Holy Cross, Dr. Philip. Did you know Amalekis? Just a wonderful family, like really gentle, and their kids are just love the church. And how many kids do they have? Six. Maybe. Yeah, and just a wonderful family. And he wrote a great book called Parenting Toward the Kingdom. It's really good and really practical. And we're trying to have him come visit the parish to do a retreat as well. It should be wonderful. But I recommend we get those two books if you get them soon and just read them. Make sure both parents read them. And then we can talk about over the next 6 months or whatever how to implement it. But like his book is especially good because I won't go into it too much, but he kind of covers kind of an outline. And the things he covers... he covers six different things in his mind that are important. He says, always parent with the end in mind. In other words, whatever you do, think about where we're going. What's our purpose? Like, what do we want our kids to become? What's your end? He talks about respond. He always says, respond, don't react. So when we react, we usually react in anger or frustration. When we respond means you're calm and you have a plan. Right, so I'm really oversimplifying. So he talks about always parent with the end in mind, not just like you're angry. Long term, which is what's the ultimate end of parenting? Like your kids to be saved, right? And to live holy lives so that they can raise their own families and they can be in the kingdom of God, right? But let's be honest, most of us don't parent with that end in mind. We think, I want them to be successful and not be weirdos and to have nice cars and to have nice houses and not to be sick. And we obsess about those things, but we often, their souls kind of get a little bit left behind. That's really the most important thing. You're much better off. You have to believe this, really. You're much better off having a person who loves God and loves other people, maybe he's a little bit of a nerd, than to have like a really cool, trendy, successful, smart, good-graded kid who's a mess to be around, no one likes, right? And that sometimes happens. Unfortunately, our priorities get messed up sometimes. And sometimes we see these things, problems in our kids, and we don't know how to fix them. So instead of fixing them, we just ignore them and just focus on the good things about them. We tend to do it with ourselves as well. Like we focus on the good things and avoid the weaknesses, but with our kids, I mean, again, it doesn't matter how smart they are. If you're really smart, but you're not a nice person, no one wants to be around you. Right? And if you're really smart, I always think in the workplace, all the bosses I had, if you have two bosses and they're both as talented, but one is humble and has is a faithful person, the other one is a schmuck. I mean, you put up with the schmuck, but everyone likes to work for the other guy, right? It's a big difference. So, you know, I acknowledge a couple things with my kids. I mean, I acknowledge that compared to my childhood, my kids are maybe a little bit sheltered, but I'm thankful for that. I'm glad they don't know what I knew at my age, and I'm really thankful. And I'm really thankful that that their life experience is around here with you guys and with normal things. You know, I was talking to a very serious Orthodox family, and their kids are very serious about their faith. Their daughter and their son transferred to the school, like a charter school, and next thing you know, everything's going crazy. You know, gal's trying to cut herself. She's bulimic. All of a sudden the kid thinks he's transgender and all this kind of stuff. Like, where did this come from? Well, all of a sudden you have a whole new culture and a whole new set of values is thrust upon them. If your kids go to regular school, they see you for a couple hours on the weekends maybe. And if the other time they're just playing video games or watching TV, hanging out with their friends, little time in church, little time with you, but the culture is raising them. And school is a very powerful force, and you have to take that back and say, this is the most powerful forces, like you guys. And the powerful force is Christ and the church, but you gotta vote with your feet. Again, like what you do matters. So, this family, I mean, these kids, so faithful. I used to hear their confessions, everything. Now they don't know if they believe in God or not, and just like they don't care about their parents anymore. They don't want to be at church. They don't want to be at, they fight. They want to run away. They want to call the cops. It's happened in 6 months' time. So, you can do all this work, and it can be squandered. So, I'm not saying, That's impossible somehow if your kids are not homeschooled, but you have to be really, really on it. And you have to be really careful who your kids spend time with and willing to say no. Like, no, you're not doing that. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to hang out with a group of people. And when they're young, do it when they're young. It's fine. But if you let them do it. And then at the age of 16, say no, you've already lost. Because they're just going to say, no, forget you. I'll do what I want. Or I'll call the cops. I'll, you know, whatever the deal is. So, and you'd be surprised, you know. It's funny. I know parents, the kids go to the same school. And one parent will say to me, confession, like, oh, it's such a good school. It has really Mormon influence. It's really good. And I hear from other parents, like, oh, yeah, it's like queer central there. Everyone thinks they're homosexual. And everyone's trying stuff. Everyone's cutting themselves. Everyone's doing drugs. The same school, right? And I talk to the other family. Like, what? I didn't know that. Yeah, well, come on. Right? So, you gotta be really careful. Really, really careful. I wish we had an Orthodox school right now. You know what I mean? In other words, I think we have a strong homeschool community, and I acknowledge that it's not for everybody. It's for more people than you think, actually. But I acknowledge that that's not possible for everybody. I wish we had an Orthodox school full time. But again, that's a big deal, too. It's really difficult to do an Orthodox school. Why? Private school is a luxury. Private school is a luxury, so how do you pay for it? Most Orthodox schools collapse after a couple of years. They get big donations, and then no one can really pay for it, and then it just kind of falls apart. To be honest, most of the folks who homeschool now wouldn't choose the school, right? Because they like having the freedom of doing what they do. So the way it would have to work is for us when we build a new church, which, by the way, is going really well. There's some exciting things happening. You have to have like a couple of dedicated people. Like, you have to have five or six educators who are retired, who are dedicated to doing it. Maybe our Brazilian ladies retire here, and they're dedicated to doing it. A couple people retire, and then you have no payroll. And they do have the kindness of their heart, and you have one or two payrolls, and you do it. There's a school in San Francisco at St. John's Cathedral. There's only a few that actually make it in the country, because, again, you know, it's a public versus private thing. So my goal is to have lots of options. But the number one option you can't replace when you homeschool or you send your kids to school is you have to just live a holy life. And your kids have to know, like, this is your priority. And you have to make it theirs, too. In other words, you have to make it theirs and, like, take them to the, you know, to monasteries, take them to the feast days, get them out of school in St. Nicholas. You know, do these kind of things that show you really care about this. I don't know how else to say this. You know, my kids have spent time with those kids. You don't know this family from the Greek church, but and my daughters say the family that's kind of got, you know, the kids here, they don't, can't even relate anymore to those kids. They come to me and say, I don't know what to talk about, Papa. I don't know what to talk about anymore. We don't talk about church. We don't talk about normal things anymore. They just talk about things, crazy things from school, and I have no idea anymore. And they think I'm out of touch, so they don't want to talk to me anymore. Sad. You know what I mean? It's sad. I said, well, just pray for them and love them and don't be a weirdo, you know. Don't judge them. But it's hard when their hearts are stolen and they stand in confession with you and they're saying these things. You just go, wow, happened real quickly, real quickly. So a big part of that is creating a home that children like being in. They have to like being home. If they hate being home, if all they feel like is they get nagged and stuff like that, doesn't mean they don't do whatever they want. No, no one's saying that. That's dangerous too. But if they like, if it's disciplined, if it's joyful and there's a sense of virtue and there's like, they like being there, they won't be as tempted just to hate you and be with their friends all the time. Right? But if you create a situation where there's always arguments, always fighting, you're fighting with your spouse and they're fighting, they're going to be like, I'm out of here. That happens anyway. They have a temptation anyway, you know, a certain age, just to want to be away from them, be with their friends all the time. I remember that age, you know? But it gets hastened a lot more if you don't have a home that's joyful. You know what I mean? Like, do you have a Christmas tree? Do you have a place? Do you sit around and do stuff like that together? Do you just listen to them? Do you take walks together? Do you do anything fun together? I'm shocked a lot of families don't do anything fun together. I mean, parents will drag their kids to do what they want to do. Or parents will go to the kids' sports games, whatever. But they don't actually do stuff together. They have nothing in common. I know lots of families, the kids have nothing in common with the parents. The parents are interested in what the kids are doing. The kids could care less what the parents are doing. Right? But like, just going and doing stuff together, going and taking a walk, going and, I don't know, going to the carnival together. I don't know, you know what I'm saying? Just like normal things. Pretty quickly it becomes a drag and everyone's doing their own thing. At nights, everyone's in the living room and everyone's in, or probably not, they're in their own rooms. Everyone's on their phone. Everyone's on their computer. Everyone's watching a different TV. You know, there's no connection to each other anymore. So you have to create a situation that really makes them love you and love your family life and love the Orthodox life, because the other is a lot more appealing initially. It's kind of like McDonald's versus like eating kale, right? McDonald's is much more appealing initially, even though it hurts your stomach and you're going to die that early. Sin is like that. It's much more appealing. It's like fast food. But when you start eating healthy vegetables initially, you go, oh, it's not pretty good. That's not, I don't like it. But then you're like, oh, I feel better. You see what I mean? So in the spiritual life, sin is really appealing and there's heartburn. Spiritual life seems less appealing, but once you do it slowly, it's much more nourishing. Does that make sense? But kids are drawn to flashiness, right? So to teach them patience and teach them, it's a lot of work. So he talks about always being parent with the end in mind. He talks about respond, don't react. He talks about understand struggles in terms of the values and the virtues of the kingdom of God. In other words, we often parent with very worldly things in our minds. You know, I'm not going to let you do that because that drives me crazy. Well, that's a good reason. That has to be a deeper reason. Because like, if you keep doing that, you're going to be so full of pride, it's going to be hard to face God. If you keep doing that, you're never going to be honest and you're going to be a liar and you're going to have to face God. In other words, if we're always thinking like we're making our kids ready for the kingdom of God so that they have virtue and they want to avoid their sins, it's a lot better off. He talks forward in another chapter about separate feelings from behaviors, both for the parents and for the kids. And again, I'm not going in detail with this, but that's a big point. A lot of parents can't separate their kids, you know, what they're feeling from what they're doing. Not always the same, right? So in other words, we might flap the handle because this rule is broken. You got to have discernment to know, right? Just because they're tired doesn't mean they get an out. But you have to know when to let off the gas a little bit, when to let up, right? Some parents are super, super easy, and they decide they're going to get disciplined, and they're like super, super harsh, and that day they pick is the kid has the flu. And they're super tough, and the kid can't do it, and you know they're screaming, and it's a backfire, right? So separate feelings from behavior. That's a big issue. And he talks about, the last two are awesome. Teach the joy of obedience. Kids hate being obedient. They want to do, I want to do, I mean, every confession the kids I hear, most of their confessions, and adults, by the way, revolve around, I want to confess throwing a fit. I want to confess yelling at my parents. I want to confess, why? Well, they ask me to do things, I don't do it. Why don't you do it? Because I want to do what I want to do. The parents are just less, adults are less quick to admit that. But it's the same thing. You know, why did you yell at your kid? Well, why were you frustrated with your kids? Well, because I had to get off my phone. I was reading a really nice article on gossip.com and on the couch, and my kid needed my help with something. And I finally said, fine, what do you need? Right? Or sports, whatever it is. I mean, guy, gal, it's not, you know, the point is, then you're teaching them, hey, be obedient and enjoy doing what you don't want to do. But you never do it? It's pretty accusing, right? And you can tell your kids one thing, if you don't do it, you tell your kids, listen, a big part of life, and the Christian life especially, just life in the world is doing things you don't want to do. It's called being a, I tell my kids, my boys, it's called being a man. Being a man is doing things you don't want to do because you love God and people more than you love yourself. I tell the girls the same thing. Being a true woman means like you love other people more than yourself. And so you push yourself. That's like our older generation has that sense, right? But the kids lost. Like me. And so I hear lots of confessions of, no, I hit my sisters, my brothers. I swear at my parents. I mean, I can't imagine swearing at my mom. I mean, I would have no head, I think. It would have been knocked off. She always told me I'll knock your block off. She never did, but she always threatened that. But I never would have done it. You know what I mean? I never would have. We yelled at my mom the way. I don't think any of us would have either. Isn't that funny? But the next generation, wow. I mean, my kids don't do it to me, but I think they're a little bit afraid of me. A little bit. I mean, I feel really close to them, but I think they have in the back of their mind, like, I would never do that because I don't know what would happen. You know, I don't think they'd knock their block off, but, you know, I'm happy to have them think that. Ultimately. And I think, hopefully, it's a matter of respect. It's a matter, they would be sad, they would be really saddened to do it. You know, and I think that's the way you want to create. Not a fear. Fear is easy to create. But a sense of respect where they would never want to speak to you that way. The problem is that at school, everyone does it. Like, we grew up, you never talk back to the teacher. You get big, deep stuff. Now, I mean, I went to a parent-teacher conference. I don't do this very often, but the teacher asked me to come. And I came, and it was funny. I talked to with the parents and everything there. And the kid had some mental health issues and stuff. And they said, it's a class of 30 kids. And he said, this boy is the only one who does the work. Because there's a whole thing of moving away from homework in school. They do big blocks. So they have like an hour and a half to teach, an hour and a half to do the homework. They don't have to take it home. He's the only kid doing the homework. So all the people, they're just throwing papers at his head and everything like that. And she's like, no one. I went and watched the class. Unbelievable. I mean, I would have been slapping heads. I mean, it was unbelievable. No respect for the teacher. Even though we were sitting in the corner, you think they have even a little more. No respect for the teacher. No sense of discipline. Because she could not tell him to do anything. Only this one boy worked. You know, and she said it was all the time. He's the only one that worked. And so he got kind of like know, he liked to do his homework. He was kind of like just an eager kid and kind of shy. But he hated being there because they were all teasing him and stuff like that. My biggest point is, like, the teacher had no control. There was no respect. They talked back to her. They were rude to her. They were laughing. They were kind of mocking and giggling at the teacher together. Oh, man. That never would have happened when I was a kid, right? I think I would have gotten a ruler to the head or something serious, you know what I mean? I need to go to jail nowadays. But that's the culture we live in. That's the culture our kids are around. So we have to work a lot harder to create that real sense of reverence with our kids, you know? So teach the joy of obedience and teach the joy of repentance. It's super important, like, to go to confession as a family, or when your kids go to confession, to tell them, like, I'm so proud of you. Like, in the sense of, like, it's so good to get this junk out. Like, it's a real joy. But also, not just repentance and confession, but, like, when they lie. Like, my son lied to my face this morning, just now, before, a little beforehand. He asked me a dumb question. Like, what are we doing tomorrow? And I was like, why do you want to know? He was like, no reason. I was like, I know you like the back of my hand. Tell me right now why you want to know. No, it's no reason. I said, this is the third time, boy. I said, I know you like the back of my hand. I know you have something behind your head. So just, I'm not even mad. Just tell me now. Okay, fine. And he told me the whole thing. I said, you lied to me three times, though. Right? Because you were afraid I was going to let you do what you wanted to do. It was a good teaching moment, right? But it's just amazing how it can become natural, right? Just to do, I want to do what I want to do, and I'm going to manipulate to make that happen no matter what, right? Reality is adults do it all the time. I'd say most marriage problems are because people are really selfish. Right, because the husband has to do something he doesn't want to do and get off his two kids, and he feels nagged, and so he gets bitter because he's lazy, or vice versa, or the wife doesn't want to take care of her job at home or do what she has to do, or, and then the husband gets bitter and then she feels guilty, and there's like this mutual guilt between the husband and the wife, and it both comes down to the fact that neither one of them are humble, and they both I want to do what I want to do, and I got married so that you can serve me. You don't mean to say it that way, but you know, we marry for not mutual sacrifice, but for mutual, like, well, one hand washes the other. That doesn't work, you know. You got crowns when you got married, not like, you know, business handshake symbols over your heads, you know. You got crowns that you promise to die to each other. It's the only way it works. And I think that they have to see that, because they're not going to see it at school. They're not going to see it on movies. They're not going to see it in music. They're going to see it in church, which is not that much, and they're going to see it in you every day, hopefully. It's a big burden. You really can screw your kids up. Big time. I don't mean to make anyone depressed, but you should be scared. You should be really scared by that. By the fact that your laziness and your stubbornness and inability to humble yourself can screw your kids up for life. That said, if you humble yourself, you can make a lot of change, even if your kids are quite a bit grown. But the whole, like, well, I'm just worthless or whatever guilt thing and just throwing the towel, that's a cop out. Because you have to face it either way. Right? I have a family say, I can't do it, I can't do it. I said, well, what are you gonna do? Are you gonna move to Timbuktu? What are you going to do? Are you going to quit? Are you going to get them to an orphanage? I mean, this is where we are. So, sorry. So what are we going to do right now? Right here. Right? So forget the pity party. And that's a big problem, by the way, is pity parties. Right? For parents and for kids. And stop the pity party. We have to raise these kids to become normal, to become holy. So let's just start right now. Does that make sense? It's really that kind of attitude you have to have. So if you're proud of yourself and you're unwilling to look at yourself, your kids will do exactly what you do. Not what you say. They will do what you do. And if your kids are really bold, sometimes they'll point it out, right? Like, oh, you want us to do this, Papa, but you don't do that. Like, dagger. Oh! Right? Right here. Right? Or the mama, like, this, that, and the other. Oh, I always see Dad doing this, but I never see you do it. Or vice versa. I hear from the kids sometimes, you know what I mean? My mom says to go clean my room, but I never see her clean anything. She just lays on the couch all day and yells at us. Right? What am I going to say? I tell them, shut up and don't judge your mom. And, you know, I mean, in a loving way, I say, how dare you judge? You know what I mean? Like, you're not your mom. It's not your job to judge her. Your job is to be obedient. But then I call the mom later, like, just so you know, big ears, bigger eyes for sure. So please be careful and let it be a motivation. Like, I think for ourselves, I hate to say this, but we're willing to mess ourselves up. We figure, well, I can't, you know, we spend our whole lives messing ourselves up. One of the reasons why God gives children is to help you, to motivate you to change your life, actually. You stay single forever, you don't change. And part of the blessing of getting married is it kind of forces you to change, hopefully. Then you have kids and it really forces you to change. Some people don't. And now it's not just you being messed up, it's them. But so you're hoping that something cracks in the heart and goes, okay, I can't do this anymore. I have to be not lazy anymore. I have to forgive. I have to stop being so bitter. I have to stop speaking that way. I have to. Or that it's going to, I mean, it's a lot bigger than me now. It's like being a priest. It's horrible because every little thing gets not magnified a little, but by like times 500. You ever notice in your kids, the things they do, the irritating, sinful things they do, you can find in yourself directly? Oh man, I can see it directly in my children. Like, it's myself. You know what I mean? And it breaks my heart, but no use being depressed about it. Just do something about it, right? You can't change the past. You can't. So the joy of obedience and the joy of repentance. And that means on a daily level, like Panteleimon, I don't want to call him out, but he was one I had a little talk with downstairs. It was a 15-second interaction. At the end, he said, listen, I said, you know, like, do you feel busted? Yeah. I said, it was a stupid little lie, but the stupidest little thing. Like, there was no consequence to that. Just that. I'm like, just tell me what you're thinking next time. You know, rather than tell me, oh, I have no reason for that. You know, and a lot of parents would let that go. But you see, you can't let even the littlest thing go, because then that builds a sense of mischief. And they got away with it. You see what I mean? You have to win it. I hate to say that, and that way you have to win every time. If you lose once, you've taught them that there's a merit to lying, and that it works out for them. So at the end, I said, listen, just tell me next time. Just this is just a stupid lie. He was kind of humbled by it, and he said, forgive me. And I gave him a hug, and I said, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you for humbling yourself. You could have thrown a fit about this. That's what he means by the joy of repentance. Like, when your kids mess up, you want to create a path where they know how to repent. Because again, when we mess up, we often feel guilty, so we just deny it. It's like when the husband and wife fight and the kids often watch. Like, if the husband feels guilty, he doesn't want to deal with the guilt, so he just like, right, so his wife points something out that's very true, and the kids see it too, rather than just say, you know what, you're right, babe, I'm sorry, forgive me, I'm sorry. And the kids see, oh, look, dad was wrong, we all see it, but he was humble. And it reunites them, that's joyful. I want to be like that. But instead, they often see ego and like, how dare you accuse me, and you do this, this, and the other. And a guy or a gal that's attacked in marriage, they usually just lash out and point the other people out, their problems. It's very, hopefully not an orthodoxy, but it's not in the world, it's very rare for a person to say, thank you so much for pointing that out. In orthodox sense, hopefully we're reaching that point where it's like, thanks, but you're right. That your kids need to see that. But if all they see is defensiveness back and forth, and then when you say to them, like, did you do this? I didn't do anything. You know what I mean? Like, when I was teaching school, special ed, I'd see a kid just punch a kid next to him in the face. And I'd say, I saw that, you know, I didn't do nothing. What? I was right there. I saw you punch. I take him out in the hallway. I said, listen, I saw you punch him. I said, I didn't do nothing. I didn't punch anybody. And I was like, listen, like, there was a school police officer. Isn't that funny? There was one school nurse for six schools, but there was a police officer every school. I said, think of the officer for assault, or you can just man up right now, admit to me you did it, and I'll say nothing to your parents. I didn't do nothing. Unbelievable, right? Like, so entrenched in denial and like can't take ownership of anything. Even though it made a much bigger stink for him, it made his life much, much harder, you see? Because it's just so ingrained, like, you can't admit you did anything wrong. That's weak. It's actually wrong. I know in some cultures that way too, like, I don't know if Sinisha can speak to this, like, I don't know about your family too, like, or Serbians, right? Or Greeks. I think in ethnic Orthodox culture sometimes there's a sense of parents can't be weak. And that's actually a huge backfire. I don't think I'm weak with my kids. I don't think it's, being humble is not weakness, it's true strength. Being machismo actually shows, if you're hiding bravado, actually shows that you're secure underneath it, right? So what I mean by that is, like, some guys in confession, or gals too, from Russia, Romania, Bulgaria, Serbia, they say, I said, do you apologize to your kid? No way. I never apologize to my kids. I said, what? Well, you don't have to apologize for punishing them. I don't apologize for punishing my kids. But if I lost my temper, I do, right? You apologize for what's wrong. Not for what's, and I always say to my kids, I'm not sorry you got in trouble. I'm sorry if I lost my temper. Or I'm sorry if I was speaking, you know, in a rude voice to you. I'm sorry if I was irritated and critical, and forgive me for that. That's true. That actually shows humility. Like, the true men in the world, these monks are tough as nails, but they're the first ones to be humble. Right? So that's a big lesson for your kids. When you mess up, don't be afraid to say, forgive me. Don't apologize, because sometimes doing consequences stinks, and you feel guilty about it, and parents feel so guilty, sometimes they apologize, or, I'm really sorry to do this, but, okay, you're not gone, you're going to be in your room, right? Don't say that. Say, I love you, you know, I hate punishing you, but this is the way it is, doing it. And then, let's say you say, I'm sorry that whole episode yesterday, I'm sorry I lost my cool, but, you know, I'm not sorry I got in trouble with you, that was your fault, but it shows that you have a clear thought, it shows that you're not crazy, too. Kids often think their parents are irrational and crazy. Which sometimes they are, right? So, you know, it's like, am I in trouble or are you just mad? I think adults can't parse that out sometimes, right? You ever had someone mad at you and you can't figure out, like, did I do something wrong or are they just mad at me? Kids have a hard time figuring that out sometimes. Like, is dad just in a bad mood from work or did I actually do something wrong? And believe me, they want the out card. Kids want to wiggle out of it. So if you're at all mad, or frustrated or rude. Like in my house, you want to get under my wife's skin? My wife's trying to make a point, and they go, are you mad, Mom? Are you in a bad mood? Oh, man. No, but if you keep asking, I will be, right? But it's manipulative, right? The kids are trying to like kind of point out your. So if you're above my mom, again, never. My mom was always, I love you very much. No, I'm not in a bad mood, but you're grounded for 2 weeks. You're just smiling, like just leave it to Beaver, you know? And made me so angry. I was angry because I couldn't get in there and manipulate it. I couldn't blame her. You see what I mean? So that's really important. So teaching them the joy of obedience and joy of repentance. But you can't teach something, like you can't give something you don't got. Right? So, as a priest, if you don't pray and you don't love people and you do anything, how are you going to teach anyone else to do it? You shouldn't be a priest. Right? I mean, if you don't confess, often ask someone else to confess, you know? It's the same thing in any other, you know, if you can't, I'm going to be a French teacher. So you don't speak French. Oh, I'm going to learn. I'm in a different career path here. You know, first of all, French is hard to learn. You know nothing. It's just something in your mind. You can't teach French. You don't even know French. There was an idea in his mind, you know? It's like being a parent. I'm going to be a really good parent. Well, it's an idea. Now you've got kids. Right? Like, what are you going to teach? Like, your kids to be humble and to be kind. If you're not even making any attempt, like, I don't want lazy kids, Father. Okay. Do you do your to-do list as a man? Well, no. Come behind. Right? Wives say, do you clean the house up? And do you take care of the kids? And are you, no, I don't really do those things. Well, how can you ask them to do their chores if you don't do your chores? We all have chores. Right? I mean, how can we ask them to do it if we're not doing it joyfully? If we're not asking forgiveness? If we're not quick to ask forgiveness? Because you know what? They're not going to have many models. They're not going to have, hopefully, if they're in church and around people like this, they'll have other models other than you, but you're it. You're it. And that's pretty scary. Right? And in the instance of my mom, it was like saved my life because of her holiness, really saved my life. And she really kept me. Her character and her way of, even when I went astray a little bit, it was her face was always before me. Always before me. And I never felt judged by her, ever. Ever. This is an embarrassing story on tape, but there was something about my mother's character that was so inspiring that I couldn't let her down in some way. You know, I wanted to be like her in that way. So, and she wasn't a saint. She wasn't perfect. So you don't have to be perfect. You just have to be serious about who you are and what's the word? Genuine. Genuine. I mean, a lot of people try to do one of the biggest things I hate is when someone is in church, you know, and they're very modest and, oh, and bless me, Father, and things like this. And then I go to their house and they're like, you know, or they, I see them out in the public or something like that. And it's a totally different person. I mean, I knew one gal who used to yell at people in this church for not wearing cover their heads. And I saw her at the gate one time I was walking and she hid behind a pillar. And I was like, why are you hiding behind the pillar? I see you. And I found out why she slipped around. I turned around because the skirt, I mean, you can almost see her underwear. And she was falling out of her dress. And I was like dying laughing to myself. You know, I said, I'm not going to look at you, but we'll talk later. You know, I talked to her. I said, what a hypocrite. What a hypocrite. You're telling people in church to put this head covering on. And this is a scandal. You think God can't see you now? Give me a break. You know? So, again, people notice that stuff, right? Kids notice that stuff if you're a hypocrite. They have the biggest vision for that, right? Kids see it. So, don't be a jerk. You know, one time before I was ordained, there was a priest. It was at a monastery back east, and I was in the altar doing confession before. And I said, do you have any advice from ordination? And he said, yeah, I have some advice for you. He said, this is real deep, so brace yourself. And I said, okay, it's holy elder. He says, don't be an a-hole, and you'll be in the top 10%. And I was like shocked he said that. Oh, he didn't use the abbreviation. He said it. We're in the altar. I'm like, what? And he's like, need me to repeat that? I was like, no, I got it. And so I was kind of like a little shocked. So I was a priest for 5 years or whatever. Went back and saw him. And the first thing he said to me was I right? He's like, I was right, wasn't I? You know, and I hate to say there's some truth to that. I think that's a life lesson. Don't be a freaking jerk. And people will like you. But sometimes we like pride ourselves on being a jerk. And sometimes we let ourselves be a jerk with our spouse or with our kids. Like we're careful around like work and other things with this limit, but we go home and rawr, we're just going to be myself or something. You know, really, it's important in the spiritual life. I'd much rather take a person who doesn't really know church very well, or who doesn't make their cross well, but is actually a really genuine, kind person, who actually loves people and loves their kids, over someone who has everything down and memorized this and that and does everything right, but they're jerks to their kids and other people. Right? I mean, the spiritual life should make you more loving and make you more normal. Right? And that's a really important thing. So that's just kind of an abbreviation I'm giving of the book, of that one book. It's super helpful. just a little bit. And it's very practical because he's written from an Orthodox perspective, but he's also a therapist as well. And he's raised an incredible family, so he's not coming from like this theoretical education or, you know, counseling mumbo jumbo. You know, our Father Paul is getting his second master's in counseling right now. He's in school for that. So that's going to be helpful to the community as well. I mean, I think there's a lot of overlap. I think there's times when the medicine of the church as a spiritual father is much more powerful than that mumbo jumbo. But there's other times where it's practically helpful too. So I know some of that from counseling. He's going to know even more than me in time, so it'll be good in the parish to have. You know, some people are like, I don't need a spiritual father, I need a professional father. Which is a little ridiculous, ultimately, because we do these things professionally, you know. But it'll be good to say, oh, okay, well, Father Paul is a licensed, you know, family counselor, whatever, so you can go to him. And then whatever he asks, he doesn't know, he's going to come to me anyway. So it's funny, we're the same team, you know. But it's good to have that in the church, right? Because it creates a sense that there's not some kind of knowledge outside of the church, right? And if they go somewhere else to get more knowledge in the church, so be it. Right? Because some of these things are very damaging, right? Like some people will say, I'm having a problem with my kids and my marriage. Long before they come to me, they go to a counselor, a worldly counselor. You know why they do that? Because they want to avoid me. Because the issue is spiritual and they don't want to deal with that. And they're hoping they can just go to some counselor, especially if one spouse really knows it's their fault. And they have lots of guilt about it. They avoid me like the plague. Because they assume that I'm going to hammer them, which is not true. Right? They assume that I'm just going to blame them. So like, let me go to a worldly counselor who won't just blame me like everyone else blames me. Right? Well, you can't get away from yourself, right? Ultimately. And of course that's wrong, by the way, too. I never hammer people like that, ever. No priest does that. So they try to find a worldly way, and they go, and the worldly counselor either tells them the same thing, and they go, I'm not going to any counseling. These people are all wrong about me. Or, right, you're unwilling to look at the problem, and you want to lie. Or the worldly counselor fills you with pride, which is the most dangerous thing. You go, aha, the church was wrong. Aha, my husband is wrong, or my wife is wrong. Aha, those priests are wrong. I knew I was an amazing person. How dare they tell me I'm not the most amazing person in the world? It happens, right? It builds ego and pride. I know a gal who was suffering with anger at her mother who had passed away, and I was talking about forgiving her mother, praying for her, doing it every day. It's not working, Father. So she went to a worldly therapist. She always worked for like a distributor, husband for an alcohol distributor or something like that in another state, and she took these bottles, and her advice was to take bottles and draw the face of her mother on them outside with a baseball bat and just go out there and just every night just wreck them, just get all the anger out. Needless to say, that didn't work either. And in fact, when she finally came back to me, it was like a train wreck and way more work. Like, we were just getting started on forgiving and getting anger. And now, this great advice has made you more vicious and angry. It's insane, right? So, again, be careful where you take your advice from. Because if you want your, and again, what's your life? Again, if you're an Orthodox Christian, you say, hey, I'm friends with Father Justin and Father Paul, and he's my spiritual father, and I go and talk to him on a regular basis. That shows your kids that you know you're not perfect, and that you ask for help too. Because being a real man, I don't need help. I don't need directions, you know? Right? That's stupid. Because then when you walk in, when you get lost, I'm not lost, I'm just exploring, you know? And your kid's like, uh-huh, right. We all know you're lost, right? So it's the same kind of thing. Like, you're just, you be a man, you do it this way. And your kids will do it, but they're doing it because in spite of you. Right? In spite of you. But if you show humility and show you, oh, forgive me, honey, I made a mistake. And they see the dad or the mom go to confession, and they go, they make mistakes too. I want to be like that. You know, does that make sense? I can go ask for help too. Right? So, that's an important book. Just to give you a little bit of an outline, what they talk about. The last thing, I want to spend some time with questions, if we can. Just practical questions. Again, my hope with this class was just to do this, to raise this issue in your hearts. And the whole parish's heart. This is massively small turnout. We have so many kids in the parish, right? And we're crawling kids out of our ears. So this is a hard time for some parents, and I get that. And you can't get everyone at once, but hopefully people will listen to it. Hopefully, I want us to begin the conversation. But I want us in the next couple years as a parish, like really doing workshops about this, having speakers come in, us doing more of this, you working at it more in your life, me and Father Paul coming to your house and saying, what do you do? Or like, let's help you set up a rhythm, right? Have one of us over for dinner and just say, help us. Or come to my house for dinner sometime, right? And follow the rhythm that we do, right? And how did I learn it? The priest who baptized me, I hung out at his house with his kids. And I was amazed. How do these kids know these prayers by heart? Because they just do it every day, Father Justin. I couldn't imagine that at first, right? And now my kids have the prayers memorized. I don't have them all memorized. The kids do. If my kids are in the car for comp line, I have to like really think hard to get all the words right. But they're there, it's like, fantastic. Right? So it builds in itself. But I didn't learn it from a book somewhere. You can't learn it from a book. It's living, right? So I spent time with him doing prayers and watched how he did it. Many of you spent time with me, right, in my house. Or maybe not a lot, but a little bit. And it's important. Or not just priests, by the way, either. Other families. But if you want to say, hey, Father, let's get together and get our rhythm together. I really recommend that. Like, if you say, Father, I have no idea where to begin. Like, my kids have no chores. There's no discipline. We're all messed up. Then meet with me, you know, or Father Paul, and say, okay, what does your life look like? Let's have dinner sometime, or a cup of tea together, or a beer. We can sit together when your kids aren't around, or they're playing out in the backyard. It's fine. My kids can come over too, and they can play, whatever. Let's look at your day. What time do you get up in the morning? What do you do? When can you do your prayers? Like, if I came to Tanisha, what time do you get up? You get different time. You need that time to pray by yourself. Home at night for dinner. How can you make it something that works so the kids are excited about it, right? What's it, you know, can you do long prayers or short prayers? Well, you got to start short. You know what I'm saying? There's different. If I went to your house, it'd be different. Everyone's schedule is different. Life is different. But if, you know, one of the priests just help you with that, you know, consequence chart, you know, how do you make it together? How do we get on the same page? Put it in the fridge. I can help you with that. We can help you with that. And so then you can try different things, right? We can experiment with it. But you got to do something. What I find is people are just so drowning in it, or in denial, they do nothing. Or they tell me, like, are you going to come to class? No, Father, we're good. I don't need the class. Oh. I would say that's equivalent of saying, I'm good. I don't need confession. I don't have any sins right now. Nope. My father heard a confession the other day and said, do you have any pride? No pride. And you go, huh? Do you breathe? And then you have pride. You know, I never judge people? Nope, never judge them. What? I'm not sure what planet we live on, right? Well, they live on the planet Earth where everyone's right all the time, right? So it's the same with this class. It takes humility to say, I don't know what I'm doing raising kids. This is hard. Right? So if you want to change it, you come to church, you live it, you're humble, and you're willing to open your lives. But if I say, I want this priest involved in my life. I've heard this before. Well, I'm not looking for something to do. I'm not like bored and like, I wish someone would call me, invite me over so I could run their life. Quite the contrary. Like, it's very busy. But I'm honored to do that. And it's a two-way street. You ask me to do that, then that burden's on me now. To like love you and to pray for you even more and to be thinking and helping you through that. But it's really helpful. And it's not just for weirdos. People think that people that get help with their kids in marriage are the people that are the losers. Only the losers need help. A lot of guys and gals say, we're not going to college. Our marriage is fine. Oh, really? We're falling apart. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to let them know we're losers. Right? Well, we're all losers. And the difference is those who are like willing to admit it, they come get help and they have great marriages. And they work with their kids. The ones who are just so stubborn, or, this is even more dangerous, people just tell me, it's fine, Father. It's fine, we got it all worked out. Even though I see their kids like cursing at them, can't do a single chore, the house is a mess, but those other kids, go do that. The kids won't come down for dinner. I was at the house recently, come down for dinner. No, I'm playing video games. Come down for dinner. And I said six times, oh, and then the mom says, I'm just going to run dinner up to his room. And I said, no, I'm leaving. If you do that, I'm leaving. And then the husband got offended with me. It was a big blowout. I'm happy to have that blowout. I said, this kid treats you like junk. And he wouldn't eat any of the food we were making. So she made him special foodie food just for little baby boy who's like 12, who won't leave his room. And you're going to go serve him. He has to come down and have this basic respect to stand with his family and with a visitor. I'm not personally offended, but you're creating a monster. I mean, that's a freaking nightmare. And you know how many times I've seen that? I've seen that a lot of times. A lot of times. So don't create a monster like that, right? And if you have one, I'll come help out to tear the monster out of the cave with you, right? I mean, something's got to happen. But really, that is going to be a 40-year-old living in your basement who's a weirdo, right? Who's going to be really messed up. I was with somebody the other day, and he was 45, and looks like he hadn't combed his hair in 20 years, and he's got a little online job making nothing, and he's slovenly unclean, and like this, and he's got a really good job. And I'm not sure the guy will ever function on his own. But he has no problems. He's not mentally retarded or physically retarded or anything. He just was allowed to be rude and sheltered, and then was too late to do anything. And now his parents are in their 80s, supporting him full time, and he's fine. And if I were to suggest anything, oh, that's so mean. Right? That's not fair. He missed out on life. Really, he missed out on life. I'm working with him, and God willing, I mean, there's always a way, repentance. But he missed out on the joy of being married. He missed out on the joy of having children and grandchildren. That's really sad. And it's his parents' fault. Lots of ways, too. There's no way around that. So, So hopefully just be inspired with this process. So talk to us, keep talking to us. In your own confession, talk about it. Talk about how, like, be willing to say, like, I yelled at my kids, I'm lost a little bit, I don't know how to deal with this. And be willing to talk about with your spouse and be on the same page like we talked about. So next, New Year resolution. I like New Year resolutions because we need a new beginning. I mean, every minute's in the beginning, but we have the church New Year. What day is church New Year? September 1st, right? Great, new beginning, right? We have the new year. I mean, we have our feast days. Pascha is a new beginning. So we need a lot of them. So I would say January 1st, tell yourself, just really small stuff. As a family, we're really going to seek God. We're going to pray every day as a family together. I'm personally going to pray alone. We're going to come to confession as a family. We're going to get a rhythm of some sort, at least try it. If we fall on our face, we're going to try to get it going this year. Not perfect, we're going to try, and we're going to work on it as a parish and as a family. So that's my hope. So I have some questions. Any questions you have? I'm not going to think the answers. I just want to talk about it. And again, we can shut this. I can shut this off if you want. Feel more comfortable with that. Do you feel more comfortable with that? Shutting it off? Yeah. Shutting the recording off. If we're going to talk personally, tell me. Do you care? Probably. I mean, the only people going to listen to it, it's not going to be nationwide. I mean, people going to listen to it are, you know, people from our parish. Yeah. You want to ask the question? You know, and by the way, we don't have the answers. Father Paul and I talk about this. Right? Father Paul's wife comes to me for confession and we talk. And I mean, priest families are struggling with this too. It's not like, you know what I'm saying? Like, but we are struggling with it. And we're going to work on it and fall and get up. We're working on it together. Right? Like, we take care of each other. Like, when my wife and I have struggles, like, we call our spiritual father. Right? We call a number of priests. And at the beginning, especially, we needed a lot of help in that process. So, questions? No? Yes,
Father Paul. Sure, I asked him last week. If you could expand upon something, you would talk about how you don't want to give chores as punishment because the kids will learn to hate chores. Uh-huh. You talk about frustrations as punishment. Obviously, kids don't like to hate frustrations. You know, my kids don't like that. They start getting frustrations as punishments, and
sure.
So they do them with feeling like consequences. So what's the difference?
Okay, that's a great question. Do you understand his question? So again, I'm not a big fan of necessarily chores as punishment. That's not totally true. Here's what I mean. In situations where kids don't really do chores anyway, or they do them in a bitter way, to add chores as a punishment solidifies this view that again, the ideal is to do what I want to do, and the punishment is I have to actually do something else now. You see what I mean? But in a situation where kids do chores anyway, and they do them pretty joyfully, adding other chores on top of that as a punishment isn't going to be a big deal. Does that make sense? So my kids, I will do that sometimes. They have chores, they do them. But I'll add, my mother's chore with my kids, God rest her soul, was, you're picking up dog poop. Right? They hated that. And we don't have a dog anymore, and they love that. But my mom's not there to get the punishment anymore. But, I mean, it was a chore. They hated it. But again, they didn't have a mentality of, I mean, they don't always love the chores by any means, but I find often that some parents looking for consequences, they'll use chores because that's not a part of life anyway. And so the kids are not really cheerful givers. Does that make sense? Like, fine, do this freaking chore. That's like not going to be helpful. That will backfire. Same with frustrations. So in other words, in my family, frustrations are a part of our life. In other words, like in our prayers, at the end of our prayers, we do prostrations as a family together, at least two prostrations, right? They see us do them in the church school. We do them in church. But, you know, in my prayer rule, this is a good thing, by the way, to add to your prayers if you don't do them already. A very common part of a person who's in the prayer life is you'll do morning, evening prayers. Maybe you'll do some Jesus prayer if you haven't started that. You'll read a bit of the gospel, and you'll do a number of prostrations. So if you're a strong, healthy guy, you know, it's a common thing. If you go to an elder in a monastery or any priest, give me a prayer rule. It's like, give me a regiment for health. Prostrations are a part of it, right? So, you know, I first became Orthodox priest, I do 40 prostrations a day. Or you're a college student, do 80. You know what I mean? But it tires your body, it gets you in good shape, and it's a physical sign of humility and repentance, right? You go to monastics, they give you a number of prostrations to do. It's actually very, very healthy. So my kids have a set number of prostrations to do. You know, for Nina, it's 10. And she's excited, right? She does the Jesus prayer, what she does. And her prayer was just to go and do the beginning prayers and Our Father and do 10 prostrations and say the prayer to the Mother of God, and she's done. But she's young. But she, like, does it, like, faithfully, you know, every day, you know. And it's tailored to how old kids are. For some people, look, it's just say the Our Father, and do one prostration, kiss the icon, that's your prayer, right? So it depends on every situation. So if you're doing those in your life, if your kids maybe see you doing it, like my kids might come in the chapel and see me do my prayer rule, or see my wife doing her prayer rule. My she's not doing prostration with a big belly, but she'll do bows or something like this, you know, what she can do. So in the kids' mind, it's not weird. We do them. So to say, hey, which happens a lot in my house, you know, I mean, those boys must do a lot of prostrations. You know, 25 frustrations. How many? 20. And they go, fine, 40. What? You want to keep going? You know? So, I mean, Pantaleon would get 100 frustrations one time. You know? But it's not miserable because he's used to it. I take a person, give another frustration, give him 100 frustrations, the next day they're going to be like that. Right? It's like the adults who come to Lent for the first time, and they come to the canon of St. Andrew in Lent, and they do all the frustrations. Have mercy on me, oh God, have mercy. And they do all the frustrations, and they try to be tough. And then I see him later in the week of Lent, and all the other times walking like that.
So what's wrong?
You know? Like, that's humbling. So you don't want to do it to your kids, right? So punishment has to kind of be in line with your lifestyle. So for us, that works. If you incorporate some frustrations, it's a sign of repentance before God. You know, my kids aren't always happy about it. They're not like, I love these frustrations. But by the end, I tell them, sometimes I say, go do frustrations until you repent it. They repent pretty quick. Because they get tired, right? But again, if your kids don't do this, it's going to seem like spirituality is miserable and it's mean. And it's, you see what I mean? So it's there's no recipe. That's what I'm saying. Right? So build up your spiritual life in such a sense that you want to build up a mentality that when they sin or make a mistake, it's not just that they broke the rule or they offended you. That's not what God wants them to do. Because you're not going to watch them your whole life. I'm not watching them all the time. I always tell them in confession, listen, you can lie to me all day long right now. You can lie to your parents all day long. But Jesus knows everything in your heart, everything in your mind. And I want that to be in your mind. So don't do it to please me. I tell them, don't do it to please your parents. Do it because God is watching. You want to be a loving person and a real person. That you have to instill. So when they go off to college, they live their own life, that when you're not around them anymore, they still want, they have something deeper that they're appealing to. Right? If it's just like watchdog, they call it straitjacket parenting. As soon as the straitjacket comes off, you know what I mean? Like they're going to go buck wild. You want to heal the inside, right? So that they don't need the straitjacket anymore. That's really, really important. A good thing I heard from an old priest was, parenting kids is like having a fishing line. You have a big fish in the line for a long time. You know, when you let too much slack out, you know what happens? Too much slack. I come from a fisherman family. Too much slack out. Then if they start running on a run, they can get so much speed off the slack, and then when it catches, boom, tear the line. You lose them. But same the other way. If you reel it too tight, you come too tight, and you're pulling them too hard, snap. So it's kind of a play. It's a cat and mouse kind of game to keep. You keep some tension on the rod, but you know when to let out line and when to pull some line in. It's the same as parenting. You know what I mean? You make these rules, we set this thing, but it's just like a skeleton. You got to know when to lay off. Like, you have no one to say, you know what? We're just going to get an ice cream tonight. That's it. Forget the chores. We're going tonight. So, not all the time. And if you do it regularly, then it means something when you don't do it. Right? When you say, you know what? We're not going to do this house cleaning today. We're just going to go for a hike. We're going to be all together. You do it every day, you have a dirty house. It never happened. It's not special anymore. But if you have a rhythm, if you know when to say, or, like when the kids mess up and they're used to getting the punishment, and you say, you know what? I'm not going to do it this time. Maybe they're tired or they're sick. It means a lot to them. It shows mercy. But if you're always doing that, then they're not getting the point. They don't even realize that you're being loving because there's no rhythm. Right? That makes sense? So think of that mentality. You got to keep them on the line. You got to be able to hold them, but you got to look when to let out some line. Like, I'm a big fan. Like, Elder Sofroni would say, don't make your kids weirdos. Like, especially like teenage kids. Like, I let my kids go to Star Wars. I'm not like, my kids will never watch any movies. I don't have TV because I think TV is junk and I can't afford it, to be honest. And I would probably watch too much of it, to be honest. But I like movies. Like, my kids have seen Lord of the Rings. My boys have seen Gladiator. People think I'm crazy. Right? Oh, you can't show them like violence like that. I was like, for my kids. I mean, read The Lives of the Saints. I mean, it's pretty brutal. So I don't show up to my kids and I think, oh. Like, for instance, Father James, who was here last week, remember the priest was with us? I showed him that movie that we watched on St. Nicholas Day called The Child's... Child's Christmas in Wales, and he sent a huge package to my house today. So reverence and prayers.
Without disrupting the prayers.
It's a really hard deal. So that's hard. And again, the earlier you begin, the better. It's harder when they're older, but it's still possible. The first key is make sure you are praying. That's hard, right? Because prayer. If we're standing in a family in front of our icons, we're praying. If you're always like eagle-eyed correcting them, that shows them one thing. Well, they're not praying. They're just watching me, right? Now, the opposite, is parents are just like come into the church in the church, they dump their kids in the playground with a book, and they come and they're just like, I'm like, what are you doing? Father, I'm too deep in prayer to be disappointed, to be distracted by my kids. Well, that's not fair to your kids. You selfishly pray, but you never teach them how to pray. Right? So the balance is, again, you create a rhythm when they're young, somewhat, and you stand there and you say, and you really pray. Right? When your kids look over at you, they should see you with real prayer in your eyes, and looking at the icons with your eyes closed and being serious. And you can't be overly crazy. I had those times, it's just the beginning. And, you know, God forgive me, I still have them once in a while when I'm tired or whatever and I'm frustrated. But thank God it's few hard between. But the beginning, it was hard because you do have to be tough. Like the sea feels like seven spanks and even there. And that's not the most prayerful prayers in the world. But when I took them out, it still went on without me or with the other kids. So, and again, you got to know the mood. You got to know, are your kids really tired? Like, my kids are really tired. The bar is pretty low, right? In other words, like, you want to sit down, sit, little kids sit. You know, you're tired, we push through to do it. It's amazing that we've been doing it. You want to really honor them. When they're tired, like, sometimes my kids will lean on me. I'm really big with my kids, like, don't lean on me during prayers, right? This isn't like huggy time. This is time to face God, right? And so, but sometimes when my kids are falling, I'm tired, I'll give them a hug and I'll hold them like this. They know in general, because kids don't want to focus, and they just want to snuggle you instead. And it might seem cold, but it's not cold, right? It's like, no, we're standing before God right now. As soon as we're done, you can sit in my lap and I'll read a book to you and I'll snuggle you all you want, right? So you have to feel it out, right? But if there's tension and it's like a drill sergeant, it's miserable. But you just have to have accountability. And mine is just like usually very quiet. I'm just like, my boys are usually next to me, the girls, and my wife's on the other side, you know. And have your spot. You should have your spot in prayers. Right? Like, we know how our spots are, generally speaking. And, you know, mine's kind of in the back, kind of watch. And I just often have to just go, like, just tap them in the back of the head. Without ruining the prayers. I'm not angry. I'm not slapping them. But I'll just kind of tap on the back of the shoulder because, you know, just distracted or something like that. Like, hey, and then just like, oh, sorry, Papa. And I'm not angry about it, you know, most hopefully. Then I'm just like, perfect. And then sometimes, it's amazing. One time I remember Benjamin was little. He was laying on the ground, picking his nose. And just, I was kind of frustrated. And then I was reading the prayers, the compliment, and dropped the book. As I lost my spot, and he was little, and without missing a beat, he kept going with the prayers. He had it memorized already. Even though it looked like he was just picking his nose, messing around, it was soaking in, right? So you gotta choose your battles wisely. But again, that can't be all the time, because they'll never learn to stand. You know, sometimes, again, letting the kids sit is special if most of the time you make them stand. If you always let them lay down, then in church, how are they gonna stand? It's not fair to them, right? So I start slow and easy. My biggest advice is, this is St. Porphyria's advice, you be prayerful. You be focused. And again, you want to inspire them ultimately to do it, not because you're watching. If you don't, you're going to be in trouble. That has a limited power, right? Kids can fake it for you, but their hearts will be hard. But if they just see that you're focused and you're going, I really think that's the most important thing. And I think that in my life as a priest and as a father, that's been the most inspiring. And that I don't have to look at them. I don't have to check in on them. It's a little crazy, I have to do it. But in general, now I hardly have to do anything. And I'd rather let a little things go and stay prayerful and let them kind of self-correct their own hearts than be the general. And how's that prayerful of anybody else? Hey, stop it. Hey. Everyone's on edge and everyone's like, how fun is that? No one likes that. You know what I'm saying? That said, sometimes you have to be a little bit of, like sometimes I'll stop the prayers and go, okay, reset. We'll stop right there. How many of you are paying attention? I said, is anyone actually paying attention? My kids would go, no. You know, I'll say, well, I really wasn't either. So we're not going to start over from the beginning because that creates like a neurological wacko-ness. Just, okay, we're at the creed. We just start from the beginning. Let's all do it together. Let's really focus our hearts, you know. And then I believe in one God, and we start fresh. And that's humbling to them too. Okay, Papa has to refocus as well. That makes sense. If it's every 2 seconds, like, I told you to focus. This isn't focus. This isn't prayer. Kids are going to be like, get me out of here. Makes sense? So I really think just be prayerful for yourself. So hopefully the older they get, the less you want to correct, and the more you want them to self-correct. Yeah, so. They're still going downstairs. We've got a couple minutes. I hear the microphone. Any other questions? Yeah.
And this happens all the time in my house. I tell kids to do something in the normal ways.
Yep.
I repeat myself, nothing happens. It's the fifth time, you know, how many times do you say it? It has to happen, right?
Yeah.
You have to do homework, you have to go to school. So what then? like, and they were downstairs running. They said, "Stop running."
Right.
They didn't hear me.
Right.
Like, they don't understand what I'm saying.
Well, they heard you. They just.
They heard me, but I'm like.
Well, we've conditioned our kids, right?
Right.
And it's hard. And here's what usually happens. The fifth time, the sixth time, you do something different. Either people give up or they yell.
Exactly.
And that's when you yell and you lose your temper.
Right.
And so, unfortunately, it makes sense from human perspective. Like, you say, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. And then you start yelling. And what you actually train the kid is, okay, I need to stop at the sixth time. See, we go, hey, be respectful, do it the second time. The kids are smart. They wait till the consequence. They wait till it gets unpleasant. I say it needs to be unpleasant immediately. You see, but so they wait till the sixth time. So you've trained them now. Don't listen to mom or dad until they yell. That's the trigger to stop. Now it's unpleasant. Now the payoff is not worth anymore. Now I'm going to be obedient. Right? So that's how kids operate, really. That's how they operate. So that's why the consequence comes from the beginning is I give my kids twice generally. Maybe I'll get benefit that you didn't hear me. Maybe it was selective hearing. I don't know. But first time I said, please do this. And I'll say, okay, I actually do it. Please do it now or there's going to be a consequence. And this is the killer. You got to follow through. And that is the hardest part of parenting. Hands down, is consequence. First of all, you got to have a consequence picked out. So you're not just angry. You're responding and not reacting. Response means you have a planned response. You and your husband or wife have talked about. We talked about it a little bit. You know, have a planned response, and here's going to be the consequence of that action. And you talk about it before it happens too. Family meeting, sit down and say, "Listen, we've got a problem with like being obedient. And I love you, and I want to teach you. So I'm not going to yell and scream anymore." And kids like this. They like to say, "Do you like me yelling at you?" "No, I don't like it either. I love you too much. I want to do more. But here's the deal. I need you to listen to me the first time. So I'm going to give you twice. After that, I'm going to give you a punishment. It's going to stink, and I'm going to follow through. I'm not going to lose my temper, but I'm going to give it to you." And I can't say what that's going to be. Every kid's different, right? Some kids, it's a spanking. Some kids, it's take away something. Some kids, you know, it's different. But it has to stink. It has to be unpleasurable and even painful sometimes. Because it has to offset the pleasure of disobeying you. Right? So kids are running around downstairs, they want to keep doing it. Mom says, "Don't do it." "Well, if I just ignore it, I can keep doing what I want to do." Right? Keep going. But they hear, if they think, and they have to associate, like, if I keep doing this, this is pretty fun, but if I continue, ow, or shoot, I really like that thing I'm doing or that game, whatever it is, and I can't do that, okay, stop. Wouldn't it be nice if they were all saints and just like, I would never want to disobey mom, but they don't work that. We don't work that way either, adults. So this is the single biggest problem in my house over the years, and in everyone's home. Either there's no consequences or there are, and we don't follow through because it's exhausting at first. But I can tell you now, with other kids like that, and like having older kids, I'm so glad we put the work in. It was exhausting. And it was really like a gamble. I was wondering, is this going to be worth it? This is so much work. It's so much effort to like, you know, cancel plans or cancel one of the movies because they didn't follow through. I'm thinking, I don't like this. I don't want to make their life miserable. But now seeing the kind of how kids grow up, it was worth it. Really worth it. And now I don't have to ask more than once, generally. That's really nice. It's when my wife's carrying groceries and everything's falling, and she says, "Sasha, do this and try to do that." And there's never a question. Let's do it. It was worth the hassle, the hellishness of it earlier. So I get your pain. I think the key is talk with your spouse and really get on the same page. And then talk with the kid when you're not mad in a real positive way. Like, I want to have a joyful family. I want to do this. Mom and dad are talking. And this is what we're going to do. So no more yelling, but there's going to be consequences. And it's going to be hard. They're going to be mad. They're going to kick and scream, but you just got to punishment and do it. And it's hard for a little while, but you'll be shocked how quickly they'll change because they won't, again, you use their ego to your advantage. They want what they want, and they'll do, you know what I mean? And that's the way really we are, is most people in life are either make decisions based on running towards pleasure or running away from pain. It's pretty common, right? And it's common for most people, even in their spiritual life, it's the same. That's the question of questions. So, yeah, and it's exhausting for moms. You know what I mean? It seems to be nagging, 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 and all the time. And it makes you tired. It makes you feel guilty. And then they, you know, so it's hard for dads too, you know. So, and then some dads just, they scream the first time. I guess that's better than screaming the sixth time. But again, the ideal would be, I've asked enough, very calm. I've asked enough to do that. Okay, in case you didn't hear me, I love you very much. I need you to do that. Don't do it, immediate consequence. That means you have to get up off your butt. That's the issue, though. Like, if you're doing something you like to do, you're reading a book you like to read, or you're doing something you want to do, you have to stop what you're doing, go into the time, and do the consequence and all the fallout and the crying and the screaming and all that. And you go, this isn't worth it. I can't do this constantly. And it really takes up a lot of your time, your days at first. That's worth it. So, you got a question, Zane?
So the biggest thing that we are right now is in the life
process.
And it boils me and it adds to the
And then how's it? It's really hard. Again, this is not in a vacuum. Kids don't learn it from nowhere. They learn it from school and from the world we live in, right? Talk back, and there has to be a consequence. I mean, how old is she now?
10.
You can still do it, Thank God, right? Because it's a lot harder when 14, 15, 16, right? The biggest thing is you can't get personally offended. That's really hard. I get really personally offended because our kids can cut deep. I mean, we don't care what some random person thinks of us. When our spouse or kid, it goes right into the fingernail and it burns. Right, makes us madder than a hornet. My kids make me madder than anyone in the world, right? Because I care about them more than anyone else in the world. That makes sense. So the first thing is control yourself, and you can't respond in a reactionary way. Like, I'm mad, so now I'm gonna. Because you have to think of more like this isn't punishment; it's training. It's training, right? They started the car they're driving started up the road, and there was a correction. Rather than the car went off, I'm like, naughty car, no. Like, you see what I mean? Just a correction. Just a correction. If a foul shot in a basketball player is not working, you make an adjustment and you fix it. Right? So, but if you're like, no, terrible shot, you don't freak out. You say, okay, I have to adjust. So your stuff is okay. I'm not going to respond. Take a deep breath, but you got to have a plan together. And talk with her when things are great. When she's not reacting, say, listen, I love you. And be humble. I always say, the parents, I say to my own kids, listen, I know I have plenty of my own faults. And I'm sorry. And I'm working on myself. I really am working. I want to be more humble, more loving. We all got to work on ourselves together. And if we're honest, one of your struggles is talking back. And it really hurts my feelings. And it's really, I know you don't maybe mean to, but it really hurts my feelings, and we're going to have to do something about it. So here's the deal. Please don't do it. But if you do, I'm not going to raise my voice anymore. I'm not going to yell back. This is going to be the consequence. And I don't want to do it, but it is. And you got to be there too. And you just got to follow it up and you can put it in the fridge. That really helps my kids. Like, I don't do many more, but at the beginning, each kid, boom, boom. You know, sometimes it's the same, sometimes it's different, depending on the age of the kids. So I'd say both kids different, boom. Let's say there's four or five things each kid struggle with. Here's the four or five. You can't have every single thing. I mean, you can't have an encyclopedia, but four or five things, here's the thing, and also something that's a positive. In other words, I think it's important too, is like, here's the thing. If you do this, here's the punishment. If it happens, just say, okay, go to the fridge. Hey, it's not me. We agreed on this. You know what I mean? This is the deal. Go to your room, whatever. You're not going here, whatever it is. I think a 10-year-old girl is reaching the point of, you can't spank her with that. But I think that there's other things you can do that are effective. But I do think that really helps. And then conversely, let's say something's been a real problem, like talking back or lying, whatever the kid's doing. If you see they're really doing better and it's working, you have to reward that specifically and say, I'm so proud of you. Like, I'm so, like, you don't want to do it for money or take them out to dinner or something, but just say, thank you. That means a lot to me. I feel so much closer to you. Kids crave that. They crave our praise, that specific praise. Like, this is really, really good. So, this is what you got to try. First of all, you got to just kind of toughen your skin so you don't get personally offended. That's the hard part. Second, you got to make an agreement together. Sit down, family meeting. And what I recommend is do it separately. Sit down with you two and your son, and separately sit down with you two and your daughter. Otherwise, the son the whole time would be like, hey, that's how my kids are. Like, punishment, Anyway, but sitting there separately, but then having the list on the wall, so there's, openness, and then just follow through. There's really no secret. I mean, you establish what the problem is, you make some basic consequences that stink to them, has to suck, it has to suck. If it's easy, it won't stop them. So that's something that really stinks and really is going to make them not happy. And then you got to follow through it and let them scream and throw a tantrum and just let them do their thing and just love you. And then you got to do it more than a day. A lot of parents do it one day too. This is exhausting. Father, they hate me more than ever. This is worse than ever was before. I said, don't stop. Don't quit. Because if you do it then and then you quit, you've lost completely. Now you look like a mean wacko who's doing a science experiment that failed. And they're like, let's get back to the regular order where I do whatever I want. Right. So. Yeah, it's like losing weight, right? Like, everyone's looking for the next big theory, but like, calories in, calories out. It's pretty basic, but that's hard to do if we want a gimmick. I mean, making consequences and following through stinks. It'd be easier to read the right book or have some kind of magic, and we all struggle with that. So, it's a great question, though. Yeah? What's that?
My son is three. Mm-hmm. And he's a really stubborn kid. Mm-hmm. But when he's at home, he gets crazy and wants to just be really strong. Mm-hmm. He comes a lot to church. He's exhausted after being mm-hmm. here, trying to hold still, things like that. Mm-hmm. But at the end of it, he's got so much to build up mm-hmm. that he doesn't know what to do. He's really hard. He doesn't know what to do. Where do you draw the line of punishment when he's... Like,
yeah.
Just delirious.
You got to use discernment. I mean, there's no formula. The big key is when they're not tired first. And I have to be honest, a lot of times kids, they don't say it, but a lot of moms and dads are so afraid to really do it because, and again, they can't only obey when the conditions are perfect, right? But again, you got to ease off sometimes too. So what I find is, I would tell you personally, okay, when he's not tired, you have to be really strict. Loving but strict, and like in other words, if you say something to him, it has to be done, or there has to be a consequence. When things are really good and he's aware, now when he's again, you play your cards the best you can, right? If kids have gone through a whole liturgy, they're doing pretty good. Their behavior gets progressively worse. They're more and more tired. You got to lower the standards a little bit, you know, not totally, right? And at some point, I find some parents their kids do very well, but then the kids pull the tired card, and sometimes kids don't even know they do it. They just know that I throw myself on the floor and scream. Mom goes, oh gosh, he's tired. How can I do this? And they go, kids are super smart, right? We've talked about this before. Like, Kim said, I'm tired. I can't do this. I'm tired. So you got to distinguish, right? And so what I find is being strict in other times and then give him half. But you can't just say, okay, no discipline. You got to say, I'll be a little more lenient. Like, okay, I'm not going to make you stand. You can sit, but you got to sit right here with me. You see what I mean? You lower it, you lessen it, but you still require some kind of obedience, right? But a lot of kids have learned the psycho view, right? I go psycho, no one can control me, and I got to back off. A lot of kids do that, by the way. That's very common, 2, 3, 4 years old, right? Tantrums and throwing fits, and like, oftentimes those can be controlled by regular discipline, you know? So it's not fun, and you got to reward again. I mean, I wish we had the feel for the kids to run up the liturgy. That would be great. You know what I mean? That's just a reality. But I think, again, I think that you're not going to go wrong. Like, just knowing your personality, I think that, you know, and being on the same page with your husband, making a thing and just following through, trying not to be upset and angry, and the older they get, it gets a little easier. There's certain ages that are really tough, and they really challenge you, and they really want to win. And I found, to be honest with you, in modern times, most times the kids win. And that is, and I don't mean that like, I'm going to win the ego. No, their win means their ego wins. And so they're manipulating you, right? So this is the perfect time, though. And St. Paisio says by the age of 4 or 5, you have to establish something. You can do it later, but it's much, much, much harder. But you can have an ego so built up about me and my needs by that age that it's very, very hard to break. It's more painful. So if you do it by the age of 4 or 5, and again, I remember those days of Benjamin, and I was looking at me 3 or 4 and 5, and just thinking, gosh, all this kid does is get punished. But it was worth it. I mean, you know, I'm glad I did now, because it was, boy, oh boy. So, yep, it's hard. So talk to your husband, be on the same page, have the same thing, you know. There's a comedian that says, like, you know, they say, what's it like having 5 kids? He's like, you know, imagine you're drowning and someone hands you a baby, you know. I live that, you know. So, you know, you're in a busy time in your life, you know, with lots of kids, and it's harder to give consequences when you're chasing other kids. That's hard for my wife. It's like, she has this big belly, you know, and she's running around, things like that. So the advantage is you put the work in now, then later it won't be so much work. But when you're having it, sometimes, Decithios, go to this place. Justina, here. Nina, I told you. That's a lot to do. And so the default is just to either just ignore it, because you just can't handle the stress, which I get, and that happens sometimes. My wife even tell you, that actually equals more work later. That's the exhausting part of parenting. Hopefully, if you start early, then hopefully, like, the older ones, a little bit less work than the next one, right? To be honest, this is why a lot of parents don't homeschool. A lot of families don't homeschool because they said, I cannot be around my kids all the time. It makes me insane. They hope someone else can do it. And the older thing, that's the case. I'm not sure that's the case anymore, because they don't respect teachers anymore in the same. They don't demand the same respect. So you think, oh, my kids will... I had someone who homeschools, and they almost stopped homeschooling because there was tension between the mom and the daughter. And they just exploded, and now they're so close. And the mom told me, if I just entered a public school, which I was this close to do, that rift between us would have stayed the rest of her life. And now we're close. So you see, it kind of popped a certain bubble, you know? So, So for lots of reasons, it'll make your life easier. So, yeah, being a mom, it's the hardest job in the world. The hardest, most rewarding job in the world, too. You know, but it's really, really, really hard. You're a punching bag. Parents are punching bags for our kids. And that sounds bad, but no, I mean, kids will hit us harder than they hit anybody else because they know they can do it and we'll still love them. So don't be surprised when your kids say terrible things to you. Don't let it stand, but don't be personally hurt. That's kind of what they know that. And my mom, I said a couple of hurtful things to her that really broke my heart later in life. When I kind of repented, I came back to her and said, I'm so sorry I said those things. But she said, you know, it didn't bother me because I know that you knew you could say them to me. That's interesting. Right? It doesn't make it right. But there was no deal breaker with her. No matter what I told her, there was no way I can get her to stop loving me. That made me mad. A little bit, you know. So let's go ahead and we can probably talk a lot more, but let's continue conversation. You know, after the holidays, I think we should do more just question and answers. You know what I mean? And talk about different things. Maybe even get different scenarios, you know, different things and things at work. So keep going. Let's pray together.
We explain the complexity of their focus of blessed and omnipotent Mother of our God, more honorable than the cherubim, more glorious than compared to the seraphim. Thou without corruption bearest God the Word, and our truly faithful focus and magnify thee. May God have compassion upon us and bless us, and may his face shine upon us and merciful unto us. Amen.
I think one more thing too. I saw a video today. Someone sent me of this girl who's dying of cystic fibrosis. She's not Orthodox. But when she was born, she was going to live to be 5 years old. And the 5 years, she was going to live to be 10. And the cystic fibrosis, CF, is like when your body fills with mucus and eventually your lungs and everything just breaks down and you die. And to live, you have to do 4 or 5 hours of treatments a day, breathing treatments and 100 medications. And so, you know, 10, you'd be 14. 14, you'd be 15, 16. She's 20 now. And she's a beautiful girl. And she'll live to be 25 if she's lucky. You know, but it's, she talks about dying all the time. And she talks about how we take our life for granted. You know, and she's like, you know, people think, oh, I'm going to die soon, I better do everything in the world I need to do. He's like, no, she's like, that's nonsense. That's not real life. She's like, I want to slow down and just really appreciate my life and appreciate my family. Really appreciate my parents and my brother and my sister and appreciate the little things, a cup of tea, the little things of life. Don't go out and have to create new experiences. Just experience something now and to think about death. And that's going to happen. And what kind of legacy are we leaving for our kids? You know, if we get in a car accident tonight, how do we act with our kids? That doesn't mean getting no punishments. But we're really loving with them. I mean, we make life really complicated. And I was just struck with this girl. She says, I'm dying. I'm dying. That's the way it is. And I'm getting ready to die. And she says, by the way, she goes, every viewer, you're dying too, by the way. You're just under the assumption that it's never going to happen. She's living more in reality than we are, this girl. Right? She takes nothing for granted. She simplifies. She has no like, well, in the future I'll be happy. In the future, she's not pushing things to the future. She's living right now as it is. It's really precious. And she's not even Orthodox. I don't even know if she's a Christian or not. But I was pretty struck by that in families, how important that is. How we can take our families for granted. You know what I mean? So really, like in this season, like take time off. Just forget the busyness. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm as busy as it gets, right? As a priest, but I actually gotta say sometimes, you know, like I just want to be with you and love you as a parishioner, as fellow Christians, and just love. You know, we're gonna build a new church. It's glorious. It's gonna be so much work. I had an amazing meeting today, by the way, with the city. So many miracles are happening. It's unbelievable. I can make myself an anxious mess thinking about how I'm gonna raise $1.9 million in the next, and thinking about this, that, and the other, and emails I gotta do, and that. I think, you know what? I do what I need to do. But at the end of the day, I'm putting it away. I'm just going to be with you, be with my kids, and just tomorrow we die, right? So, I mean, I say that because I think with parenting, we can get like, oh, anxious, this, that, and the other. Yeah, we need to have a little bit of structure, but just, if you just love your kids, you love being with them, you're not always thinking about the next thing. Kids can sense if you're just with them. Like, if my kids would just sit and do Christmas carols in this time, right? You might say, oh, your kids know how to sing. My family could not sing as a kid, and we all sang anyway. Right, and just did it. And at first, as a kid, I didn't want to do it. Just being together. Not on the phone, not doing anything else. Just be together and force it. It really is like the greatest joy. My kids will tell me, I like that better than watching TV, Dad. Not at first, they didn't. Right, so I'll send the video out to the whole parish, but it was very sobering. You know, so don't take it for granted. Thank you, guys.